You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Dr. Helen Caldicott, Nobel Peace Prize recipient, environmental scientist, and leading advocate for nuclear disarmament, and author of New Nuclear Danger, George Bush's Military-Industrial Complex, offers a chilling scenario if we go to war with Iraq. Peace Watch spoke with Dr. Caldicott today about the impending war on Iraq and the recent visit of Cardinal Pio Longhi, the Pope's ambassador to the White House, in order to persuade Bush not to attack Iraq.
I think that President Bush took absolutely no notice of the papal representative who visited him last week, but he's made up his mind, and I don't think anything on earth would stop him bombing Iraq with the most hideous weapons of mass destruction that man really ever devised, except if the Pope goes to Baghdad. And that's why I sent out the message to the Vatican and all over the world, and I can't tell you, the response has been overwhelming. Thousands and thousands and thousands of people are emailing and mailing and faxing the Vatican. So the other thing is that the American Friends Service Committee has just put out a call to the Archbishop of Canterbury, the Dalai Lama, and the Pope to go to Baghdad on the 17th of March, which is the day that bombing will begin, I think. And they're asking Jimmy Carter to moderate this conference that will go on for days, if not weeks.
And what are the chances of that actually manifesting?
You know, if these men are men of God, if they really believe what Jesus said, nothing else matters. It doesn't matter what their schedules are day to day. They will get themselves to Baghdad as soon as they possibly can and be the ultimate human shield to prevent the death of up to 500,000 people. But if America uses a nuclear bunker buster, up to 3.5 million people. They could do nothing else of importance compared to that.
And to those who may be saying, well, it's not appropriate to mix religion and politics in this manner, what would your response be?
Well, this isn't politics. This is about global preventive medicine. It's got nothing to do with politics. It's about absolute morality. Thou shalt not kill. I just, as a physician, can imagine babies being torn apart by cluster bombs and razor-sharp shrapnel and daisy-cutter bombs that literally suck people's eyeballs out of their skulls and rupture their lungs, and depleted uranium weapons that cause children to get cancer in very much increased numbers than normal, and women to give birth to babies with hideous deformities. And then the ultimate thing is to use a nuclear weapon, which the Pentagon is mooting, to vaporize hundreds of thousands of innocent human beings. I mean, this has got nothing to do with politics. This is the most inhumane situation that I guess I've read about since the days of Hitler.
You said that the Pentagon may be moving to use nuclear weapons. Is that documented?
Oh, absolutely. There was a major article by William Arkin in the Los Angeles Times 2 weeks ago quoting numerous Pentagon documents saying that they may well use a nuclear bunker buster which would kill up to 3.5 million people, according to the International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War. This particular impending massacre reminds me of the Spanish Civil War, where Hitler went into Spain and practiced his new weapons before he started the Second World War. And so appalled was Picasso that he painted Guernica, the most outstandingly powerful anti-war painting ever seen in the history of the human race. And this is a similar situation. And they have an operation called Shock and Awe, where they're going to drop 3,000 missiles in the first 2 days on Baghdad, and they compare it to Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The Pentagon do.
Dr. Helen Caldicott, given your experience, your expertise with regard to nuclear weapons, what kind of impact is that likely to have?
Well, it will absolutely slaughter hundreds of thousands of innocent human beings and tear their bodies to pieces.
We're coming in on the heels of International Women's Day, and there's been a lot of focus on the fact that women polled across the U.S. and probably the world as well. Women tend to be more against this war. Have you given any thought to why that might be?
Absolutely. I mean, estrogen and progesterone have a more profound effect upon the neurophysiology of the brain than does testosterone. I'll just give you an example. There was a researcher working in a lab out here in San Francisco, and she noticed when something happened that upset people in the lab, the men would go into their rooms and shut the door and fume, and the women would run in the next morning and clean the benches, make coffee and sit around and talk. And she said, that's interesting. So she did their hormone levels. The testosterone level in men went sky high. And in the women, a hormone called oxytocin that induces the contraction of the uterus during labor went sky high. And clearly, that is a nurturing hormone that leads to conflict resolution amongst women. And that's created the ongoing existence of the human race under stress. And it's clear that women are 53% of the human race, and it's also clear now, quite clear, I think, to most, that women actually need to take over.
And so how do we explain the Condoleezza Rice and the Margaret Thatchers?
Well, they're just the most minutest percentage of the female population. The magic number is 30% representation. Below 30%, women tend to behave to please men. They vote for their missiles, but over 30%, say in Congress or a parliament, women say, no, you're not getting your missiles anymore. We're voting for milk for children. They need mutual reinforcement. You see, if a nuclear weapon is used in Baghdad, that could trigger the early warning system of the Russian archaic system and trigger nuclear war. And what most people don't know is that Russia's got America targeted with 2,500 hydrogen bombs on hair trigger alert that takes 30 minutes to hit the United States. And America's got Russia targeted with 2,500 hydrogen bombs. Nuclear war would be over in 1 hour bilaterally, and a nuclear explosion in Iraq would be picked up by the infrared detector in the Russian satellite and triggered by accident. We're not just talking about millions of people possibly being killed in Iraq, which is devastation in itself. We're talking about possibly the end of the Earth and nuclear winter. That we're in a situation where if the men continue with their unabated necessity to kill, that the planet will not survive. And I go back to Einstein, who said, the splitting of the atom changed everything save man's mode of thinking. And think of Rumsfeld and Powell and Rice and George Bush. Thus we drift towards unparalleled catastrophe, which is the end of the creation, the only life in the universe.
And, of course, the contrast would be Gandhi and Dr. Martin Luther King. And
absolutely. And, you know, Jesus, I mean, that great prophet also said, love thine enemies, do good to those who hate you. And, indeed, if people don't practice those two admonitions, they can't possibly call themselves Christians.
Environmental scientist, Nobel Peace Prize recipient Dr. Helen Caldicott. This weekend in Los Angeles, thousands of Angelenos marched throughout the city streets to protest U.S. plans to wage war against Iraq. On Sunday, nearly 3,000 young Mexican-Americans and their supporters held a rally at Salazar Park in East Los Angeles. Rolando Menjivar, a Vietnam War veteran, was one of the protesters present. He spoke with Fernando Velasquez.
What's the traditional function of the Latino in times of war for the United States?
They supply 10% of the soldiers, most of them get killed, and when they come back from the war, they get treated again as a second-class citizen.
What about the armed forces? Is it the Navy, the Air Force, the Army, Special Forces, the Marines? Where do the Latinos traditionally go?
The Marines and the Army. Right now, they volunteer 100%, but they usually volunteer 60%. When the draft was going on.
What about medals of honor, which in real terms means being very efficient in the battlefield? What does it mean for the soldier and his family?
What is for the soldier is a medal, and they give you a health care for the rest of your life and a hole on the flag. That's what the soldiers get. But most of the medal of honors, the Latinos and Medal of Honors, the percentage is about 20%, really high. But if you look for the Latinos with Medal of Honors, most of them, they're either homeless, they're in drugs, they're in jail. High percentage.
To be a winner of a Medal of Honor in the war, in the battlefield, I guess it means like to go and do an awful lot of killing out there. How else can you win a medal?
Okay, you win the medal when you save a group of soldiers and you save a group of another 10 or 15 soldiers. They remove them or you shoot the enemy and you get shot. Then you get your purple heart and then you get the Medal of Honor. When you do missions that save American soldiers, that's what the Medal of Honor is.
So how does that translate for the families when a winner of the Medal of Honor comes back home? What's the baggage, psychologically, emotionally? How does it deal with the family?
The same with the rest of the soldiers. They all get in a lot of percentage getting the drugs, alcohol. It's not much of a Medal of Honor. They give you a medal in Washington, and that's it.
Now, because of the new war fighting capabilities of the United States, what's to be expected for the Latino in the battlefield with the new kinds of weapons if it's going to be on the ground fighting?
Most of the Latinos, there is a really high percentage, and the Latinos are the ones that they go into the infantry. The people fighting in the battlefield, the percentage is really high. They die percentage-wise higher than any other ethnic group. Also, they get wounded higher than any other ethnic group. And they come back psychological messed up, a lot of them. And it's nothing good for the Latino soldiers.
Are they nice to the families?
The family, they only have to help the soldier coming back for a psychological trip in order for him not to get in drugs or alcohol or anything like that.
But there's no violence in the home.
It will be violence in the house, of course. If the guy is psychological coming back from the war, it's going to have a lot of psychological problems. That's why they usually go to drugs or alcohol, a higher percentage.
Okay, su nombre?
Me llamo Rolando Menjivar, soy veterano de Vietnam, estuve en la primera de caballería, he estado con el Labor Committee, la Raza Unida Party, siempre estoy en contra de todas las injusticias.
That was Rolando Menjivar, a Vietnam War veteran and one of the thousands of Los Angeles citizens marching against the U.S. war with Iraq this weekend. He spoke with Fernando Velasquez. Thousands rallied in Washington, D.C. this weekend with the anti-war group Code Pink, women who have held vigils in front of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue for several months now. Susan Griffin, writer and social thinker, an author of Women and Nature, The Roaring Inside Her, was among the speakers.
Hello, all you beautiful pink creatures. What kind of world do we want our children and our grandchildren to inherit? Yes. On September 11th, 2001, it was a clear and sunny day in Northern California where I live, but all day I looked up at our beautiful blue sky, warily searching for planes, for signs of missiles, for signs of plumes of smoke. Is this what we're planning for future generations?
No!
That instead of looking to the sky for answers to the great mysteries of creation, or to gain a renewed sense of the inexplicable vastness which holds all of us, our children and grandchildren will have to search the skies under which they live for danger, for signs of death and destruction. I would not wish this terrible fate for any child. Yet, unwisely and hopefully unwittingly, this is the fate being prepared now in this city by our own government for all the world's children. Our leaders argue that they need to use violence to end violence. There are other older arguments. They're part of every spiritual tradition, proverbs and parables that teach us the way of peace. They talk to us about karma. They say, do unto others as we would have done unto us. They speak of compassion. Compassion. I want you to imagine right now that you and your children, and your parents, if not everyone you love, your friends, your colleagues, live in Baghdad. Maybe you're at home with your grandchild or your niece on the day the United States decides to send 3,000 missiles into your small country. By far the greater portion of those missiles are aimed at your city. If you have trouble imagining this, think of New York City attacked by not just two airplanes, but by 1,500 missiles at least 31 of these will be hitting your city each hour for 2 days. On September 11th, it seemed like just everyone in New York City, if not all around the country, knew somebody who had died. I knew several people who knew people who had died. And I live in California. Imagine then considering how many more missiles there will be that before the Earth revolves around the sun, two more times you will have lost friends, relatives, perhaps your house, most certainly your livelihood, your water supply, your telephone, which could be very important because perhaps you are injured. Perhaps the child you are caring for is small and needs help. And perhaps, but let's not even go there, perhaps this child is injured or dead. Half the population of Iraq are children. If we imagine these events the White House is planning in human terms, it becomes clear there can be no safety in such a strategy. What will be created is the opposite of the only true ground for safety, mutual respect, kindness, harmony, and goodwill. All this, which we are fully capable of creating, will be replaced by unspeakable suffering, misery, rancor, bitterness, and unfortunately, but inevitably, the desire for revenge. Why not hold our hands out instead to civilians across the world in Baghdad and Chicago, Paris and Madrid, San Francisco, Rome and Berlin, Tel Aviv, Tehran, Saigon, Beijing, Sydney, Seoul, and by affirming our friendship with each other, begin to create a world in which unarmed civilians are free from bombardment of any kind, whether from the weapons of terrorists or governments.
Susan Griffin, writer and social thinker, addressing the crowd gathered for Code Pink's demonstration on Saturday at the White House. Other speakers included Granny D, the 92-year-old activist who walked 3,200 miles from Los Angeles to Washington, D.C. to call for campaign finance reform, and Barbara Ehrenreich, author of Nickel and Dimed, Surviving Low-Wage America, as well as Alice Walker, author of the Pulitzer Prize-winning book The Color Purple, one of the best-known and most highly respected writers in the U.S.
I'm very happy to be here, and it's just incredible to see you. I want to share with you, in my 2 minutes, some poems. They were a response to the attack on the World Trade Towers and the Pentagon, and also the response, which was to immediately go to war against Afghanistan. But they are about the general feeling of what war is. And this first one is called Dead Men Love War. Dead men love war. They sit astride the icy bones of their murdered horses, grinning. They wind their pacemakers especially tight, and like Napoleon, favor green velvet dressing gowns on the battlefield. They sit in bored rooms, dreaming of a prophet that outlives death. Dead men love war. Dead men love war. They like to anticipate receptions and balls to which they will bring their loathsome daughters, desolation and decay. They like to fantasize about the rare vintage of blood to be served and how much company they are going to have.
Pulitzer Prize-winning author Alice Walker. And finally tonight, this montage of women from the Code Pink demonstration over the weekend, produced by Peace Watch producer Scott Gurian.
This is America. They have a right to express their opinion, and I think it's fantastic to see them doing so in a peaceful manner.
This is really great. I just ran outside. This is really great. I don't know. I don't know what to say.
You just heard them out here and you ran out barefoot and all.
Yeah, I'm impressed, and I hope it does something.
Georgie Porgy said he'd wait for the UN inspectors. If he doesn't, he'll be faced with a million demonstrators. Georgie Porgy's all wrong. The answer, you can take this stupid war and stick it in your pants, sir.
My name is Cinda. came out from Colorado, and we're here to bring pink slips to President Bush and Congress for failure to do their jobs. What we have are slips, bras, underwear, bloomers, each with a message, slip into something more sustainable, rear into peace, peace is a cinch, support boobs, not bombs, burn bras, not children.
I'm Julie Owens. I'm here from Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm here. I brought my son with me because I want us to stop the war. I don't want it to happen, but I feel like it's inevitable that it's a train that's left the station. And nevertheless, we still have to keep trying. I want peace for our children. I brought my teenage son. He's 15 years old. I don't want him to fight in any wars, and I don't want any other mother to lose her children in Iraq or anywhere else. I feel really powerless. I email President Bush all the time. He doesn't answer. I decided, well, I'm going to go to Washington and just take my message myself.
I have two children, and I don't want them to be raised in a time of terror and war and violence, and we're teaching them to be peaceful.
My name is Renee, and we shouldn't have war because the kids in Iraq might get hurt and they might die, so we want those people to be safe and to stop the war by the signs. I'm 10 and a half.
When do we want it?
Now!
What do we want?
Peace!
When do we want it?
Now!
My name is Georgianne Arnold Gosman. I'm here today because war is wrong. My father fought in Vietnam. I'm 52 years old. Most of the people my age were drafted from my high school. Most of them are dead. Either they were killed in Vietnam or when they returned to the United States, they committed suicide. More than 50% of the population of Iraq is children. I believe that the United States of America has an opportunity to stand up and be a leader for the world, to teach the world that we can do this in a peaceful way. We do not have to kill people, ever. I'm proud to be an American. I believe that peace is patriotic. And I think it's time for us to be a world people.
We live in such a violent society. I run a shelter for battered women. I mean, there's so much violence. And the people that are running the society, the leaders are totally maniacs. They're crazy. They take billions and billions of dollars and they give it to destroy women and children. And then I have women and children that have been battered, raped, molested, and they can't even get help. We're struggling every day.
My name is Wendy Granbeck. I'm from Williamsburg, Iowa. The sign says, "We nurses don't need more patients." And I think that they're not enough resource to take care of the world's people, and we don't need to spend it on destroying more of them. There's actually a movement starting of Nurses for Peace. Because nobody knows better than we do that the medical care of the world is already overburdened and we don't need this.
Bush, Bush, we know you. Your daddy was a killer too. Bush,
my name is Maya Habush. I live between here and Beirut. Women are nurturant, they're peace-loving, and they have children, their mothers, their wives, their daughters, and they're equally effective as men, but perhaps more caring and nurturant. I'm a psychologist. I think President Bush is disturbed. He's severely disturbed. And he needs therapy. And he's bringing the world to perhaps a World War III. He's obsessive. He has affective disorder, I think. And I don't know about his mother, how she brought him up. But he is certainly showing anybody that loves war and compulsive about it and ready to go, something wrong with him. And nobody is focusing on this issue, his personal life, which the personal is the political, really.
I think that what's happened with us over the past 200 years as this country has evolved, our leadership has forgotten an old maxim, the sword cuts both ways. When you use a military offensive, eventually, and maybe even almost immediately, the consequences come back to you very quickly. And even though we recognize that in our internal domestic law, we're very good at trying to catch murderers and so on and so forth, we don't seem to recognize it in ourselves when we act as a nation. So I have to blame our leadership, not our people, because I think today you can see so many of our people out here, nobody who feels that war is a good thing.
Do you think that women have a particular role to play here?
I think we do, and I think we've been very slow to take it up. But I think ever since about the time of the First World War, when Jane Addams and some of the other women of the day who were fighting for the right for women in the United States to vote and who were trying to prevent World War I and who saw what the consequences would be, even then it was recognized that the consequences of war came mostly to children and to women. Not to the soldiers. War was no longer a battle where men go out and have a duel on the battlefield. Now it's waged against human populations in urban areas, in the rural areas.
We're came to get a seat when it says Grandmothers for Peace. We were thinking of great grandmothers as well as grandmothers.
Me too. I'm against war. I'm a Quaker for one thing.
And I just think we have no possible idea of what kind of a mess we're creating and how it could possibly be solved, and that we're just asking for troubles that we can't possibly handle.
We should be helping people over there rather than making more enemies.
Yeah, definitely. I'm a person, and this is what I think, and by golly, I wish Bush would listen. And I was very annoyed in his speech and his talk that he actually said, those people can demonstrate, those people can be against me, but I won't listen.
Yeah.
I thought that really set me going. I wanted to come here for
hey,
that very
reason. Look at this. There's more and more people. It's wonderful. We thought we were too late. Look. Oh, that's great.
I wanted to support women's energy because I think women are the ones that are going to use their nurturing power to turn the world around. Women have been leaders in all kinds of movements for social change and social justice. I believe the answer is a matriarchal society where women's values are personified.
We say that we're not irrelevant, and we're going to kick up a fuss. King George, King George, the power belongs to the people, we say. We'll spell it out for you, George. D-E-M-O-C-R-A-C-Y.
Activists and protesters at the Code Pink rally against a war with Iraq on Saturday, March 8th, International Women's Day. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. Our producer is Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias, and our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance today from Adil Hamad of KPFA, Aaron Glantz, Mike Aloni, Angelique Shofar, Ingrid Drake, and Reem Kathuta. Thanks to Pete Karak at RadioForAll.net and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. If you'd like to support this type of programming, we urge you to visit Pacifica.org and make a pledge through our secure online website. Or you can send your donations to Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.